We have a broken immigration system that needs to be repaired. It is a priority for us as a nation and for the American people. And our focus has been on fixing a problem. And from day one, then, we have done a number of things.
Gosh, she's full of crap. It makes me so mad. From day one, one of her phrases, from day one. On day one, the Biden-Harris administration began to undo 94 executive orders that Donald Trump put into place to make this country safe. And look what happened. Kamala Harris went on, was it Univision that she was studying for yesterday?
Telemundo.
That's not a separate one? Here, this is her on Telemundo talking about immigration. Listen.
Right now, we're talking about border security, and there's nobody, no Democrat, talking about a pathway to citizenship, an immigration relief, and the benefits that migrants bring to this country.
Oh, but there's no question that migrants bring. America is a country that was built in part by immigrants.
But people are concerned about their TPS, their DACA, their. We're talking about mass deportations.
I'm not talking about.
What do you stand on mass deportations? What's your stand there?
We need smart, humane immigration policy in America that includes a pathway to citizenship.
There is a pathway to citizenship. Get in line.
Yeah. Also, the phrase, we need smart. If she had stopped there, it would sound like it was out of Anchorman.
Yeah, I was, when she said that, I was like, and then she kept going.
I see plant. I see screen.
I love lamp.
We need smart.
Wild conspiracy theory. Everybody knows that she keeps wearing those same earrings. The earrings. Has that been debunked yet?
That has not been fully debunked.
It hasn't been debunked. I've seen the earrings online, like on Amazon, that they're like Bluetooth.
She wore them at the debate.
Has not been confirmed or denied, but she has been wearing them all the time.
She wore them at the debate.
Yes.
She had all of her lines down pat.
Yep.
People came out with, like, she's wearing Bluetooth earrings, blah, 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 blah. I didn't even know those were a thing. I'd kind of like to see how they work. Like, a big internet conspiracy for 24, 48 hours, she never stopped wearing them. If she would have stopped wearing them, I don't know if I would think more of the conspiracy. But she still wears them. With her delivery, the way she talks, sometimes she has these pauses. And when she sits in an interview, she'll like look off to the side or something. It just feels like she's looking for an answer. And in my mind, it's like college football where you've got her staff over there and they're like holding up signs. And it's got like Luigi and a fire hydrant and some spaghetti and a potato. And then she's like, oh, we're going to run that play.
Yes.
And then she goes.
Absolutely.
Like, I feel like she just looks over. She needs a little wink and a reminder. And then she will stall and speak in triplicate and, you know, say, you know, the important thing is in terms of the work that we need to do, including the work that has been done by the many people who have been doing the work that we could A, B, C. And the importance of C, B, and A is that the work will be done that we've been doing. Direct quote. I mean, she's kind of jumping around and bobbing and weaving. It's just like she's moving through space and time. And the only point is to get from the beginning of space and time to the end of space and time and not like just croak.
We saw the fullness of her material. Like I said before, stand-up comedian, has an hour set. She's got the same set. She's going from city to city. She's doing the same set. Politicians do this. But hers is literally the exact same thing every single time. She's not doing any ad-lib because she's in St. Louis versus she's in Ohio. She's doing the same script. We've seen that script over and over and over. How helpful would it be to have somebody in your ear, if you've got that script memorized? Oh, a question that's in the orbit of immigration. You got somebody in there going, hit House Bill. Boom, every time. So that's not getting you off your script. It gets you right back on. It would be so helpful as a politician to have that.
Every politician has a team of people who are trying to constantly keep them moving forward on the path and on in their lane. So it's not unusual to think that you would have a candidate that's being packaged, but you have to believe that the substance of that package that is being delivered to the American people is rooted in the candidate that will be running and potentially winning the office that they're running for. And Kamala is an empty vessel, and she's being programmed at all times based on the people who are around her. And I think I, among many voting Americans, would love to know the names of all of those people who are like, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. I don't know why you would shy away from talking about the team of people you have behind you helping you, you know, make better policy and communicate better with the American people. But she has not been able to deliver on that. And, you know, going to the woman who I was playing a little bit in the first segment, this woman, my favorite line is, I'm not a feminist, so sorry. She's saying this to the MSNBC Alex Wagner exclusive. Did you hear that?
I heard, but I didn't realize that was on MSNBC.
Yes. I mean, when you listen to the way she presents herself in this interview, it's an Alex Wagner exclusive. They're in a room. It almost looks to me like it's like a manicure pedicure place, the way they're sitting in these chairs, but I don't know. And MSNBC is asking them, they're supposed to be GOP voters, on their thoughts on Donald Trump. And
your feelings, and let me start with the women here, about Kamala Harris.
She's a woman of color. I'm not putting her down because of that, and I'm not putting her down because she's a woman. I'm not a feminist, so I'm sorry. But at the end of the day, I don't think that she has the personality. I don't think that she has what it takes to go up against Putin and go up against these other presidents that are built for this. I don't want to be scared because my president is scared. I want my president to feel secure and manly and about it.
We brought up gender, right? Like, do you think it matters that she's a woman and people aren't comfortable having a woman in a top leadership role?
No, I don't think that, because most men, they love their mothers. They love their wives. So as a woman, most men, they respect the woman, but she just don't have the qualification or the education to really run America, because she don't have the experience. She don't understand our struggles. Mm. And for me to believe you for another 4 years, you're crazy.
Right.
Like, you're crazy. You're saying the same thing that you said 4 years ago.
So the fact that she's the vice president,
that's
to you,
the
is
bottom line.
You're like, you've been here, you've had a chance.
Yes. Well, for me, the very first time I ever heard the name Kamala Harris, it was in association to locking up parents for a truancy. Mm-hmm. That was the first time I ever heard of her name. And I really didn't understand how this person claims to be a black woman, but yet she's locking up black women and black men and separating families.
This is the thing that is, Trump talks about this a lot. He says, you know, Kamala Harris became black when it was convenient.
Right.
Yep.
Can you talk to me about, do you agree with him on that? Do you feel like she's wearing her blackness?
Absolutely. When she sworn into the Senate, it was as the first Indian American.
Thank you.
Which is, it's fine. We don't care. Yeah.
We all know she's not black. Let's understand that. We are all clear of that. But my point of view is, like I told you earlier, she's already been there. She's in office right now.
What are your feelings?
These people are so amazing. I want to go hang out with them. They're saying all the most common sense, normal things. I find it hilarious that the first woman is sitting in there, and she's saying to the MSNBC, Alex Wagner there, she's saying to them, like, this isn't because she's black. This isn't because she's a woman. I'm sorry I'm not a feminist. Like, all of the pre-qualifications that she feels necessary to get while she's sitting there as a black woman having this conversation with MSNBC. Here's all the reasons that I'm not supporting her, but let me tell you why I am not supporting her. I don't trust her with the safety and security of America on the world stage. I don't think she can handle it. And then the other individuals go on to say, she's been in there for 4 years. Vote for her is vote for more of the same. Why in the world would anybody think anything differently than that? They just say it in plain speak, and there's no like demographical breakdown to the details that they're talking about. They're things that matter to every American voter alike.
Yeah, that's what's great is that since this is on MSNBC, of course, the interviewer And this is probably, you can't see a wide shot when you're watching it, because you don't know how many people are in the room, but it feels like there's probably around a dozen people in there.
Yeah.
And so everybody's kind of chiming in. Like, whenever you hear people kind of popping back and forth, that's different people the whole time just popping in, because I couldn't hear, like, when you're hearing it, when you're watching, it's different. They keep trying to ask them questions about race. And for the most part, they keep saying, this doesn't matter to us.
Yeah.
You're asking questions about race. We're telling you that's less important than you're making it.
Yeah. And how offensive is it to sit there as a collected group of black Republicans where MSNBC is talking to you and they're like, but she's black. And they're like, in their words, not mine, but they're like, no, she's not. That's their viewpoint of it. But the woman says, like, but that she's Indian. These are her words. She's Indian. And that doesn't matter at all to me that she's Indian. You know, Donald Trump said that she, I guess, kind of code switches wherever she goes. I've heard a lot of people from the black community talk about code switching as something that you would understand a lot more if you were in their position, that code switching is a thing. So I respect that perspective on it. But these individuals are saying that they are not looking at her skin color as a qualification or a disqualification for their vote. And like, oh, what? The safety and security of our country is more important. And MSNBC is like, really?
Yeah. And the woman who says, you know, I don't really believe in her education. You know, that's one that if you take it at face value, you could argue, no, you don't understand. Kamala is actually highly educated. You don't get this. Like, and that's a true statement. But she's saying, I don't believe that she's that smart, is what she's saying. And it's amazing, because then she that second woman who speaks in there, she goes on to say, you know, I really don't believe that she understands us as well as being portrayed. Because that's what's being pushed. It's the vibe. It's all of these like you said, this sort of check the box kind of stuff. And they're saying the exact opposite. It's not important, but even she's not connecting with us on that stuff.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, like, you talk about how she's like trying to connect with everybody on their level, you know, I came from a middle class household. You know, she's all things to all people, and you can't
Kamala did?
Yeah. She's all things to all people
that.
And
go
you
on.
Can't and you yeah and they like
this
to
changes
keep,
everything.
She likes to keep like hang out with people that keep their lawns nice and stuff like you can't be all things
that
to all
gets
people
me out,
and people are like, why do you relate to Donald Trump? He's not like you. And it's like, no, he doesn't have to be like me. He understands me, but you don't have to be like me to understand me. He's himself. He's his own thing. And then he relates to me in a way because he said, what bothers you? And I am concerned about that. And how can I fix that for you? It's a huge difference.
What a treat from MSNBC. Thank you, Alex Wagner.
That's great.
It's pretty wild.
I don't know where those people are. It looks like they're just hanging out in either a massage place or a Chinese restaurant or something.
Is it a SpongeBob theme where people are running around like throwing papers in the air and acting like they're panicking?
I don't know. Is that a meme?
Or they're just like running back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy.
I mean, I'm picturing Benny Hill.
Same thing.
Okay.
That's what's happening in my mind in the MSNBC control room when they're watching this. Like, no! Like just one long 3-minute Home Alone.
That the producer's saying, I told Alex we should never go live again.
Yeah.
We needed to edit this.
It's quite something. And it's refreshing to see people. These are Trump supporters, but there are plenty of disenchanted people with what the Democrat Party has to offer. And they're not afraid to say it. They may not come out and be like, Donald Trump is the godsend to the future of the country. He's our savior. That's not what we're saying. Kamala Harris is a disaster. And it's almost as if they know it. And the weird thing, going back to yesterday's poll question, do you trust the results of the election? It's like you have this gut feeling about how this is going to go, and then you have a secondary follow-up gut feeling of how this is going to go. We got to resolve those. 13 days.
Yeah, you say it, and I almost can't believe it.
13 days. In 14
less
days, we
week,
may never have to focus on Kamala Harris's voice again.
Now, Tim Walz has a huge future ahead of him, though. I say, watch out for that guy, because he's got me locked up as a Midwesterner.
Here's Tim Walz talking about Elon Musk of all
Elon's
people.
On that stage, jumping around, skipping like a dip on these things. You know it.
insert video here of Tim Walz entering any stage ever, anywhere.
Exiting a plane, anything. Yeah. Anything, anytime.
Pumping gas.
I just think of like all of the things that you want. I mean, name a category. Elon Musk has got your number. I just, that's all there is to it.
Listen, little sidebar here, but SNL. You're missing an opportunity that every time you have your guy who is, I guess, Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah.
Playing Tim Walz, anytime he comes out on stage in a sketch, he should be holding a pig. Like, have your guy always holding a pig and wearing flannel. That's all you need to do.
Can I also just say that if the roles were reversed and J.D. Vance made a comment about Tim Walz, or that freaking angry guy from the West Wing who was yelling at you to be more joyful yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He's also the villain in Billy Madison, which is chef's kiss stuff there, too. But let's say that, what's his name?
Bradley Whitford.
Let's say Bradley Whitford comes out on stage in support of Kamala Harris and does Elon Musk-esque things. And J.D. Vance calls him a dip sugar.
Mm-hmm. Dip sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Fun dip. Comes with a stick. You can eat it.
Are you done?
Yeah, go ahead.
If J.D. Vance said that about Bradley Whitford and called him that name and talked about how ridiculous he looked jumping up and down, and Bradley Whitford had Asperger's, 48 hours headline.
Heck yes, it would.
It would be an autism story. And they would get, in my opinion, at least a day's worth of headlines on that J.D. Vance should have known better than saying that. Everybody knows. Elon Musk, when he hosted SNL, came out onto the stage and was like, I have autism. He went and like he's like questioning SNL's responsibility in putting somebody on to host the show who is autistic. Like, that was part of what he brought to the table. He has not shied away from it. It's very much a part of who he is. And Asperger's is a socially presenting autism spectrum disorder. And the fact that he goes out on that stage and is jumping up and down, and it looks a little bit different than how Bradley Whitford might actually enter the stage. Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, who has a special needs child, who they amplified when the right attacked his special needs child at the DNC convention. And you can go check the tweets. I was telling the people on the right to shut up because the kid has a condition. It's not necessary to the conversation. You look like idiots criticizing the governor's son. He has nothing to do with this. He was overly joyful. He was acting in a way that was out of the ordinary, but that's the way that child acts, and he has a condition. So don't do that to him. And then he, the father of a special needs kid, is calling Elon Musk, who has Asperger's, is on the autism spectrum, calling him a dip sugar.
Mm-hmm.
What a hypocrite.
Shame on him.
Shame on Tim Walz for doing that.
It's not even hypothetical what you're saying.
No.
For over
all facts.
3 or 4 years, we were told by the same media you're talking about that the president didn't have any problems cognitively. He has a stutter. And then how dare you criticize him for that?
Yeah.
So anything they could find, they would have, and that would have been the story.
Yeah, soulless deceivers they are. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to speak with Josh Lloyd, who is vying for a flip blue to red Congress seat right here in our listening area. Be my congressman. Would he be yours, too? Is Nikki Budzinski,
yeah,
the Democrat, yours?
Yes.
All right, can you stay in and have a conversation with me? I don't know, would he be yours as well?
No, I'm boss.
You're boss? You're in boss, okay, look at you. Josh Lloyd would like to unseat Nikki Budzinski in the 13th, and we want to talk to him on the Annie Fry Show next. Don't go away. When I see you.
I have a lot of respect. I have a great relationship with the Teamsters. And also, obviously, I worked for 3 years for the International Association of Firefighters. But the labor movement is not monolithic. You know, there are a lot of different unions within the labor movement, and she's overwhelmingly won the vast majority, including the endorsement of the AFL-CIO, which is the umbrella organization that represents the majority of all of the labor movement. So I would actually argue, I do believe she has a lot of support from working men and women and the labor movement specifically.
That's Democratic Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski. She represents Illinois' 13th district. That's my district, right across the river in the state of Illinois. She won that 13th after Rodney Davis lost the, I guess he wasn't in the 13th, but they redistricted that. He was the congressman for Illinois' 13th. Redistricting took place. They put him in with Mary Miller's district, and so he was not able to represent the 13th anymore. And it's really interesting if you look, if you want to know what gerrymandering looks like, go ahead and look at the Illinois 13th district. It strips through all of the college towns from St. Louis all the way up through like Champaign, Urbana, I believe. They drew this district specifically for Nikki Budzinski, somebody who worked very closely with J.B. Pritzker. And she has been representing those individuals, including myself, right across the river for the last 2 years. We have a contender, somebody who is looking to unseat Nikki Budzinski, and his name is Joshua Lloyd. He's with us now on the Annie Fry Show. Joshua, thank you for being with us today. It's good to talk to you about your efforts to try to reach Congress and turn a blue seat red.
Thank you for having me, Annie.
Of course. So tell me why you decided to run for office. Why do you have your sights set on this congressional seat?
Well, I originally started my congressional run after getting out of the military. I was having some difficulties with the Department of Veterans Affairs. The VA is notorious for a lot of inefficiencies, but I was really feeling it. So they always tell you to reach out to your congressman, your congresswoman, your senator. And so ultimately, that's what I did. I reached out to my representative, and she ultimately didn't help at all. No phone call back, no email. So I was spending almost a year in the dark of what was going on within the VA, if I could even receive any service. It took almost two and a half years to even get my first real appointment scheduled for an operation.
So you kind of, this kind of born out of you as a constituent needing some congressional representation to help you. Then you take it as far as saying, you know what, I think I'll throw my hat in the ring. How have you felt about campaigning so far this term? What are you hearing from people in the district about what they feel about Nikki Budzinski and what they would like to see happen in the next 2 years?
Things have been going very well, very, very well. I've been traveling for the most part of my campaign throughout the district. I've spoken with mayors, police chiefs, constituents throughout the district, and even some very strong Democrats. And even within the Democratic Party, they are very upset with her leadership, how she acts in Congress, and essentially the bills she's been voting on and how she's voting. When it comes to the district itself, I've been, one good example is East St. Louis. So I've been in East St. Louis and Cahokia Heights quite a bit. And just speaking with individuals, a lot of individuals are really upset that their elected representatives are not focused on them. They're not helping in any way. There's been issues for over 30 years that have never been addressed until it received a major news story. And then after the major news story, then, you know, they got a lot of lip service from elected officials. Nothing so far. So, for example, Cahokia was promised something like $49 million. They only received $5 million, and they came and finished the updates of their treatment plants or their pump stations. But with that said, a lot of individuals are also voting for Trump. I have been seeing that quite a bit. So we will have to see how that plays down ballot as well.
Joshua Lloyd, this is Ryan Wiggins. I'm in your district as well. When people see in our district, which goes all over the place, as Annie mentioned, I mean, this district is drawn like somebody fell asleep. Just drew it all over the map. When people drive through Illinois' 13th district and they see a Nikki Budzinski sign, what do you want them to think of when they see a Nikki Budzinski sign?
I want them to think of the corrupt establishment. Everything corrupt within our government. That is where she stands. You know, she was tied with J.B. Pritzker. She's been tied with Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, George Soros. And if you know anything about dark money, she's also tied with a group called Arabella. Arabella is what funds under the table a lot of Democratic races. And you can't track where those donations or those contributions are going.
Yeah, I think that Nikki Budzinski is probably one of the most successful things she's done. She's been able to lay very low for these 2 years. She hasn't tried to make a huge name for herself on a national level. It seems as though she's kind of, you know, tried to stick with pretty safe votes up and down. You would obviously bring something different to the table than Nikki Budzinski has so far. What's the stark difference, Josh, between you, Joshua Lloyd, and Nikki Budzinski, the Democrat for office?
I'm very reachable. If anyone calls me, I put my phone number on my website. If they reached out on Facebook, I always respond, hopefully within an hour. And a lot of people are really surprised that when they reach out to me, they're actually contacting me and not someone within the campaign, you know, a staffer of any sort. But when it comes down to it, a lot of her votes are very left-leaning. For example, there's a lot of hesitation with the integrity of the election. And when it comes to any vote on election integrity, she always votes no. For example, the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, she voted no. And securing our border, voted no. And it's just disappointing to see that something simple as saying only Americans can vote in U.S. elections and her voting no on that, even if it doesn't do anything, it's a big statement that you support only Americans voting in U.S. elections. Why would you vote no against that?
Joshua Lloyd, again, Ryan Wiggins here. Is there any way that she is breaking with the party, or is she basically, Nikki Budzinski, just a Democrat rubber stamp?
She is absolutely a Democrat rubber stamp. And, you know, she's playing it smart. She knows that being a freshman, there's a lot of hesitation. Her name recognition isn't quite as popular as someone as AOC. So she's playing the long game. I definitely see that if she gets reelected, she's going to take a stark contrast with how she's voting now and become even more blue.
We're speaking with Joshua Lloyd, who is challenging Democrat Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski for the opportunity to represent the 13th district in the state of Illinois in Congress. When you are talking to constituents, where are you talking to them, and how are you feeling about the tone of voters, red versus blue, Republican versus Democrat, Trump versus Kamala Harris? How do you feel about it?
When I say I speak to constituents, I mean everywhere. Everywhere from Belleville in St. Clair County up to Edwardsville in Madison County, all the way over to Champaign-Urbana. I am on the ground speaking with individuals. And when it comes to the tone, a lot of individuals, Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. They are very disappointed with the leadership over the last 4 years, and they want to see a stark contrast with this upcoming election. I've had numerous Democrats call me. One individual called me yelling and screaming, and I thought he was mad at me. I thought he was really upset with me. But it turned out he was disappointed in how his former party, the Democratic Party, was treating the country. You know, prices increase everywhere across the board. We're not respected on the world stage anymore. And a lot of our industry is actually moving overseas. And they're not securing our country like they should.
Well, Joshua Lloyd, we thank you for the time today. I encourage people to go to lloydforcongress.com to learn more about you. And if they choose to support you financially, I'm sure they can do that there as well. As you're running for Congress's 13th District of Illinois representation, we appreciate you being on with us today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Annie.
Of course. We appreciate you. Joshua Lloyd, if you were looking to flip one seat, and like the impact of every congressional flip in this election is going to be massive. We've got like a couple seat majority, people retiring, resigning, whatever. In the middle of the 2-year term, one seat makes a huge difference. Joshua Lloyd in the Illinois 13 would be a blue to red. So if you're interested in supporting Joshua, make sure you go to lloydforcongress.com. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about the YouTube live chat poll. Have you voted in it yet? I hope so, but if you haven't, now's the time to scoot on over to the YouTube live chat poll. Does January 6th influence your vote? Yes, and a major influence. Yes, and a minor influence, or no influence. Go vote. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It's been a good show so far. Jack Posobiec joined us in the 12 o'clock hour at 12:25. If you stream us on the Odyssey app, you can check the podcasts there as well and catch Jack Posobiec and his conversation surrounding the election, of course. A really interesting conversation about faith, his faith specifically, but he wrote a book along with Joshua Lysak, his co-author, wrote a book called Bulletproof, and it's all centered around the assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life. And I encourage you to check out the book, but also to listen to the podcast. You got to listen to that interview. Were you able to take the whole thing in?
Yeah, I loved it. It was really good just listening to him talk about the assassination attempt and some of the things that, you know, we saw, but when you analyze them moment by moment, you forget. Certainly, it was just a couple months ago. But the picture I think he used on the cover of his book is Trump down with his hands collapsed, almost
like
you
can see like him like between some CIA legs or arms or something like that.
Obviously, there's lots of people around him. His hands look almost clasped. And just listening to Jack talk a little bit about some of the possible supernatural elements of God protecting him that day is really neat.
The YouTube live chat poll for today is regarding a conversation that we started yesterday. And, you know, we were talking about trusting the results of the election and so on and so forth, but also how January 6th is one of the key issues that is brought up by the left on a regular basis, like the support of Donald Trump in the eyes of the way some people seem to view it and the words in which they seem to explain it. If you support Donald Trump, you're as bad as somebody who breached the Capitol on January 6th. You're an insurrectionist. And so the question that we have for today is, does January 6th influence your vote? Major influence, minor influence, or no influence? I kind of changed this from what we were discussing yesterday, like, does January 6th matter to you at all, yes or no? And the reason, sometimes I leave it like this, but I thought that this was too important of an issue to just leave up to inference, because January 6th means a whole lot to some people who think that we almost lost our country that day. And it also means a lot to people who feel like we almost lost our country that day because they don't have the answers to the questions of what took place that day. The questions of such little security that was available that day. Like, this is an obvious thing to prepare for, and they chose not to. The Fed's unwillingness to confirm or deny whether whatever their capacity was in plain clothes that day. You know, I'm somebody who wants answers. I'm somebody who believes that we don't have the full picture, that we intentionally don't have the full picture, that the picture that we have access to will look very different based on who wins this election. I do not believe that we almost lost our country that day. And I do believe, as I said yesterday, that the people who benefited the most from the chaos of that day were the Democrat Party. The actual constitutional process of challenging results to an election was about to commence. They had it laid out how they were going to do it. I personally believe that there are going to be some people who would have participated in the challenging of the results, and that it would have potentially quickly been rectified or concluded. And Joe Biden absolutely still would have become the president of the United States. I believe that that's what would have happened. But when the chaos ensued, the constitutional process was stopped, and Congress threw in the towel on what they were going to do, and they certified the election. I believe wholeheartedly that the Democrats had the most to gain by what happened that day and the way that it happened. And the inability to talk about it and ask questions and get answers that aren't of the canceling variety, where if you dare say, but, you know, were there plain clothes officers, agents, you know, I think we haven't really gotten a clear answer on Ray Epps. I'd like a clear answer on Ray Epps. It's just there's so many inconsistencies and blank spaces that if we got the facts behind it and the facts bear out the way you would hope that they would bear out, then we wouldn't have all these question marks. And there are a lot of question marks. So yeah. I'm a yes, it influences my vote, but minorly, because I want to know the truth. And I know the only way to do that is to get Donald Trump reelected.
I'm a no influence on this poll. I was interested in this story on January 6th and January 7th. And by January 8th, I think it became something to me that I thought was just going to become a trespassing violation, and it was going to lose interest because it was the stupidest coup I've ever seen, if that was a coup. They've almost made me stay interested in it because of the things you're talking about. I would have moved on instantly, but there's been so much scrutiny of it from the left that the right has had to do scrutiny of it and found out that there were, it looks like, you know, some law enforcement or some sort of operatives in there instigating violence who have not been punished for that in the same way that people who walked into the building were punished. So there's been a very two-tier justice system for people. And then you just go, why is this happening? So there's so many questions that have come up because of the scrutiny of January 6th that have made me interested in it that I wouldn't have otherwise. I'm still, though, does this influence my vote? No influence.
I'm going to be honest. It doesn't influence my vote at all. I hated what I saw on January 6th, but at no point during that entire process, as it was unfolding live before my eyes, did I ever think that the country was at risk of being overthrown? I didn't think that a bunch of people in MAGA hats going into the Capitol was enough to overthrow the country. It was not what I wanted to see from people who voted like me. It's not what I wanted to see from anybody. I didn't like the trash scattered on the ground in the Capitol afterwards. I didn't like any of that. The broken glass, all of it. Hated all of that. But it wasn't a threat to the country. The country didn't almost fall. It wasn't the worst day in U.S. history. There's been many worse days.
And yeah, unfortunately, the bar is a little bit higher than that.
Yeah, and there's been many worse days in the Capitol itself. There's bloodstains on the steps from Congress people shooting people in Congress. This wasn't the worst day. It wasn't. It wasn't even close to the worst day in American history. And I'm just so over it, and I really don't even want to think about it. That's how much it doesn't influence my vote.
I want the details.
Well, I do too now. But, you know, that's come about because of the continued coverage of it.
It kind of influences my vote, and that's why I say minorly, because it's the main influence of the left. I want it. I want Trump to win more to get to the bottom of what is taking place there. I want to know, like when we talked to Jack Posobiec in the first hour, I want to know why. I had the words written down on my paper and I didn't get to say these to Jack because we kind of addressed it in the words he was saying without me having to ask the question. But incompetence, negligence, or malfeasance. Doesn't have to be one or the other, but what was it? What actually happened? Officer Gary says about the poll, does January 6th influence your vote? No, absolutely, positively, without a doubt, no. And Erica says, I could not care less about January 6th. The liberals love it because it gives them unending talking points. Let us know what you think. Annie Fry YouTube channel. We'll be right back.